ॐ स्थापकाय च धर्मस्य सर्वधर्मस्वरूपिणे अवतारवरिष्ठाय रामकृष्णाय ते नमः। Dear and revered Swamijis, dear friends and devotees, so as promised, I will speak on the third topic, and that is Seva Yoga. We have heard about many yogas, four yogas, and Seva Yoga is one of them, and not one of them, one yoga which has been propounded by Sri Ramakrishna. There is also another yoga which particularly the Panchadasi speaks of, that is Vishaya Yoga. Most of us are following Vishaya Yoga. Those who try to lead a worldly life will follow that Vishaya Yoga. Vishayananda has been mentioned in the Panchadasi, how we derive happiness from enjoying worldly things. So, well, there is also some time for question answer, and you have been given the pen and paper for that. I will try to do justice to that by not allowing you that time. because I will prefer to ask questions to you. So that I will begin with that. Don't worry about it. So, and yes, many questions to check whether we are going in the right direction. And well, though I claim these questions to be mine, but they are not mine actually. They are questions asked by none other than the great genius of Shankaracharya. In the beginning of the commentary to the Brahma Sutras, those who have read that commentary in original Sanskrit will simply be amazed to look at the poetic expression of prose. That is prose, and it deals with all technicalities about formal logic. But how poetic could it be? That is such a great wonder. And how simple it could be. The language is so simple, but very poetic. So our Swami Tapasyanandaji writes that the euphoniously rolling passages like that is such a wonderful experience to read that. But he is not that sweet there, actually. He did not allow us enough time to be relaxing. Actually, he asks these questions. And these are questions asked by him, which so far no scholar could refute or replace. These are all questions which very much touch our practical life. So Vedanta is that practical. I will try to put a few questions, and you will see that they are very down to earth. Vedantic thoughts and the very intricate logic that has been used there, they call it formal logic, reasoning. So you'll be amazed to see that he managed to make those things very practical in our life. He says that there are two things, the self and the not self, Atman and Anatman. So this, from our experience we know, and from our learning, from our studies of Vedanta and other schools of religion, we know that Atman and Anatman, there is a big difference. One is permanent, another is impermanent, changeful. So here, Shankaracharya says that by some way, we have managed to mix them up. They are actually contradictory, mutually contradictory, like light and darkness. If there is light, there is no darkness. So it is contradictory, because when you bring light into a dark place, the light kills darkness. And that is one of the riddles that we face when we try to understand ignorance. Ignorance is equated with this darkness. And simple logic is that you cannot bring 1 pound of ignorance to be investigated by light. 1 pound of darkness is there, and you put light on it to investigate. Ignorance can never be investigated by knowledge, because then it disappears. It will never be available for investigation by knowledge. That is the truth. That is why it is called ignorance. But we think that we will understand the world. We will understand this ignorance. How ridiculous could be that thinking. So it is like that. Shankaracharya says that tama prakashavat virudha svabhavayoho. They are mutually contradictory, like and light and darkness. At no point of time you can make darkness available to be investigated by light. That is the truth about it. But we have great geniuses among us, all of us are like that we manage to mix them up and then try to find reality in unreal things. So Shankaracharya says that I will lead you to the study of real, of the real, and that is the real problem. To study the real is the real problem, because it is about reality only. So Shankara says that this is called a mistake. And it is a small but simple mistake. The beginning is so small and simple, but it creates a big hill of mistakes, and we are lost in that, the maze of mistake. So Shankara says, I would try to put the questions like that, that how do we make the mistakes? And are we really doing that mistake even now, after being attending classes in this Vedanta Center for so many years, and having teachers like Brahma Rupananda Ji and Atmagyananda Ji and others, very hard taskmasters. So after that, if we are really following these teachings, I will not expect direct answer here. I will ask the questions, you try to find the answer in yourself. Check yourself whether you are true to these teachings. We are not, I don't exclude myself, sorry. So Loka Vyavahara, Shankaracharya says, this is the human conduct. This is overall, everywhere. It's a general mistake done by every one of us. None of us is excluded. Suppose he gives this example, Loka Vyavahara, how it is, that I am in this room. When I use this sentence, what kind of mistake am I doing? So we have learned this Atman is infinite. And I am nothing but that Atman. I am Atman, I am Brahman. That is the teaching. But at the same time, I say that I am in this room. This room is limited. How can that unlimited be confined into this limited space? I am here at this moment. How can that thing which is beyond time be conceived within the limited time, that now? So these are mistakes we do in our general behavior. So I am in this room, that is a mistake. So what I did actually when I say this sentence, I mixed up real and unreal, Atman and Anatman. Do we do that? And how to come out of that after learning Vedanta and these teachings, knowing it very practical? It is really, really practical. So how can I account for that mistake? How can I come out of that mistake? So we have to think it in our mind and find out that answer. This is the question. The second question is, Shankara says that we say that aham idam, I am this body. Aham idam, mama idam. These are the two types of our extension of the ignorance. I am this body. So he says, how I am this body? Now, there are some differences in understanding this. So he analyzes this, and it is so practical and so analytical. In details, he takes up the subject. He says, deha dharman. We superimpose the characteristics of the body on Atman, which is not the body. We superimpose the characteristics of the body. Deha dharman, muka, kana, kliva, badhiraha. He uses these words. I am dumb. But this body is dumb. My mouth cannot speak, that's all. My ears can hear. My eyes can see. My skin can feel the touch. My nose can breathe. But still, I say I am dumb. So there is a defect in the body. I superimpose that defect on myself. And that becomes a defect, actually, for us. That I am defective. So when I write my CV, what do I write? So many things are there for getting some privileges. If you write this, you get this privilege. If you write this, you get these privileges. Why did we create these privileges? After all, the bodies are created by God, and this could be natural. This is the reality, that the creation is natural. It came out of the existence. So it should be natural. So even if a defect is there, that is natural. In the Shiva Mahina Stotram, Pushpadanta writes, Vikaropi Shlaghyo. Even a defect in Shiva, that is to be praised. In the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, in the life of Sri Ramakrishna, we read, Sri Ramakrishna had a bit of stammering. And Saradanandaji writes that added sweetness to his words. Vikaropi Shlaghyo. Even a defect could be adding to our quality. And sometimes the defects could be really, really an advantage. I will tell you a story that there was a judo teacher whose students used to aspire to be to win the competition. So one among them was very, very ambitious. So he practiced very hard. But then, unfortunately, he met with an accident and lost his left hand. And then when he lost the left hand, he lost hope also. But still he came to the teacher and asked what he could do. Teacher said, I don't know how to help you. But there is an old judo teacher. Old is gold. That if you are above 60, then you can count to be really gold. So here they came to a judo teacher. And this judo teacher said, you can go to this old judo teacher. He might help you. I don't know how to help you. He went to the teacher, and the teacher helped him to practice. What he was teaching, only one move he was teaching always, every day. So there was an occasion that there was a competition announced, and then the teacher said, you go and register your name. So a fool's adventure is like that, he thought. So he registered his name, and then he went on winning round after round after round. And then when he reached the final, they came to the teacher and said, I don't know how I have been winning, but now I know my opponent. He'll simply smash me like that. So I don't dare to compete now. The teacher said, try. What is the problem? Try. And he tried, and he won. He won, but he could not believe that he won. So he came back to the teacher and asked, I don't know how I am winning, but tell me, what is the secret in this, that I am winning knowing only one move? Then the teacher said, for two reasons you have won. I have taught you one move which is very difficult to defend against. And your opponent has only chance to defeat you, that is by catching hold of your left hand. And you do not have that left hand. That is your advantage. That is your advantage. And it is not just a story. The reality could be like that. In reality, we could see that these defects inspired people more than having full body. Everything, you are blessed with everything, but still you cannot sign well. So therefore, we think about our body, about how I am created. All these things, a lot of complaints about ourselves. But if you look at your privileges, how you have been gifted, if you look at people who are less privileged, then you will see how much you are gifted you are. You will not have any face to complain against this natural creation. Somebody has got defective body, somebody is born a man, a woman, a gay, a lesbian, etc., etc., and we break our head about that. We forget that there is a divine soul self inside each kind of body, whatever may be the definition of that body, description of the body. Are we following Vedanta? This is the question. If these things bother us, then are we really following Vedanta? We see the defective people everywhere, so to say, but we don't bother. But if it happens to our own people, like my son, my daughter, my friend, it happens to them, then we get bothered. We feel very bad about it. We think it is a curse. We think it is karma, curse of karma. Why? So are we really following Vedanta? This is very practical. You have to answer these questions yourself. And then you know how much Vedanta, how much spiritual life we are practicing. I know a few incidents. There was one lady who suffered from cancer in her thighs, and then this leg had to be amputated. She used to come by wheelchair to our classes. And one day I wanted to show some kind of sympathy to her. I sat near her while taking food, and then I asked, "Anete, so don't feel discouraged like that." Then she looked at me and she somehow consoled me, saying that, "Swamiji, I have checked in the internet. There are so many people who do not have two legs. Look at this. Look at this encouragement she got." She did not try to find how many people are unfortunate like her, but she tried to find who are less fortunate than she is. Look at her conscience, how much strength she has. That inspired me. So this is how Vikaropi Shlaghyo, we can look at our defects as a boon. Can we do that? Then we are following Vedanta. There is a lawyer in India, in Calcutta. He is a descendant of Rani Rasmani. I used to go to him for legal consultation. And almost every week, once or twice, I used to go to him. So he had four sons. Three of them were well established, and fourth one had epileptic problems. So that he could not go out, he could not study. Every time there was always a risk of his falling down and killing himself like that. So he loved his youngest son. So one day I was telling that he is born here, what are you doing about him? How he will survive in his life when you are all gone? Then he said, this lawyer said, Rani Rasmani's descendant, he said, "Swamiji, look at his fate. What good karma he has done that he is born in my family. I have enough money to make provision for him so that when we are gone, he will be not suffering from want of money or health. And he has got three elder brothers who take care of him." So he was not unhappy because he had a son who is epileptic. He was not unhappy. Rather, he counted the fortunes or the advantages of this young boy. He was born in his family. So, deha dharman, we superimpose this deha dharman on that atman, and we say that this atman is blind, I am blind. So atman is blind. So how we should look at all these things, our deha? It is a vehicle to take us across, to drive us somewhere. But it is not me. That we have to understand. So do not think that it is a curse because I have got some defects. I have some knee pain. That is a mechanical defect. If you have a machine, it is a gene machine, it will have some mechanical defects. Why do you bother about that? And machines will suffer from wear and tear. Why do you bother about that? So, deha dharman, we superimpose this deha dharman. How much we suffer because of this small mistake that we superimposed on our self, atman. Then second thing he says, jati dharman. That in India it is a big problem, the jati dharma. They say caste system. So, somebody is Brahmin, somebody is Kshatriya, like that Shankara says, like they are all dharmas. So I say, I am Brahmin, I am Kshatriya, I am such and such. And here you will see that jati is in a different way they are manifesting. If you travel by air, then you will know their business classes. Different classes of people, they have got their jatis. Business classes, then gold member, then pre-boarding. Oh, many things are there. You will see the so many differences. And then business class people will disembark first, and then others. So business class people may be traveling by the money of the company, and you poor fellows, you pay from your own pocket, and you travel in second class, and you suffer from this discrimination. So these are the discriminations we put onto us, and I say, I could not be a Brahmin. I could not board the business class. All these things. I went into the upper deck of 380 just to see how the business class looks there. So then this crew member said, no, your seat is somewhere else, that side. I said, that I know. That I know, I told him, that I know, but I wanted to see how it is. In one minister in the Indian parliament, he said, he was a poor man, then he became a minister now in the central government. And so he said he was lodged in a five-star hotel in his life. First time he saw what five-star hotel is. He went inside the room and said, well, this is a wonderful room, but I have a question. The person who would live here, will he die or not? He will also die. I will also die. So what is the difference between this five-star and my house? So, wo log marte hai kya? He was asking. So we superimpose this jati dharma, that I could not be a Brahmin. I am a Brahmin, that is a different thing. That is a different feeling, that is a different expression. But in India you cannot write that in your CV. If you write that you are a Brahmin, you won't get the job. More possibility is that you won't get the job. So therefore, now if you write that you are underprivileged, like in a lower caste, then you can get a job easily, because 90% of the jobs are now blocked for these underprivileged people. Reservation, they call it. So jati dharma. So how we make a mess of our understanding after studying Vedanta, still we follow these things. We give value to those things. So we have to answer that question. Really, are we really following Vedanta? Again, Shankaracharya says that all the defects in the mind, all the enemies that are hiding in our mind, we attribute those things, those characteristics of the mind on us. So how is it? He says that I am miserable. I am happy, I am unhappy. While the mind is happy, mind is miserable, I say that I am happy, I am unhappy. So as we were discussing yesterday, when we are able to separate ourselves from the mind, then we will see that it is easy to actually cure the defects of our mind. The problem happens in modern psychology that we try to cure defects in the mind with the help of the mind. That is a big problem. So subject-object relation is not there, and mind cannot be the subject, because it is not the subject, it is matter. It can be an object of the subject. But we try to cure mental problems with the help of the mind, and that is a real problem. So if you study Vedanta, then you can see, you can separate yourself from the mind, and you can separate yourself from the suffering which is created by the mind. So the mind suffers, the body suffers, not you. People who are following spiritual life, they do suffer, but they do not suffer with the suffering. They suffer, they know that it is a suffering common to all, therefore they don't bother, they don't break down under the pressure of that suffering. They just look at the suffering as suffering, okay, it has its meaning. So it is like that. So we superimpose the misery, the happiness of the mind onto our own self, which is not matter, which is not anatman. Then Shankara says, then extension happens, you know. When you have one business, one shop, and it is successful, then you go on extending it, having branches everywhere. So, sakha. Bahu sakha hi anantascha buddhayo avyavasayinam. He should have said vyavasayinam. In Bengali, vyavasaya means the business. So, vyavasayinam bahu sakha hi anantascha. One branch is not enough. They create many branches. So you go on increasing these branches. So it is also like that. When I make this small mistake that I am the body, then problem happens that I try to extend this business everywhere. So then mine happens. I am the body, and whatever is related to the body belongs to me. So that is mine. Like my specs. Specs are different from me, actually. My spec. As soon as I say my body, we should know that it belongs to me, which is not the body. My pen means I am different from my pen, my possession. And do we really know that? That is the question Shankara puts here, that we make this mistake, or whatever is related to me, that is mine. So this is what is called nepotism. Here in the battlefield of Mahabharata, Arjuna did not say that these are my people, so I will not fight with them. He wanted to fight with those people who are not good, who were doing wrong things. So whether they would be my people, my clan, my religion, or my country, that does not matter. They were his own people, his own relatives. So here the question is that as soon as I make this mistake of thinking the body to be me, the next mistake comes that I attach things, bahu shakha, I create many, many branches of that. And then my family, my husband, my wife, my property. Sri Ramakrishna says, how to realize God? Three types of gunas, tan, he says. Three types of forces. Strong forces, weak forces, electromagnetic forces. These three forces to be, so these are sattva guna, rajoguna, tamoguna, like that. Sri Ramakrishna says there are forces. You can just unite those forces and use them to realize God. The force that a mother has for the child. Child is an extension of the body of the mother. So it is natural that the mother will have a relation with the child. But that connection is there. So turn that love or the attachment to the child is natural. But husband and wife, the two bodies, completely different, not blood related by blood, but they're through relation, mental, at the mental level, not at the body level, at the mental level, they are related. So they feel attraction, attachment, and love. But then what is the relation between a person and the property? Dead, dull matter. How could we find relation with that? But we manage really geniusly. We manage to find a relation between us, between me and the property. When my property is destroyed, I am destroyed. So when my property is augmented or used better, then I feel happy. So Shankara says, this is a mistake. Not only a mistake, it is against your own value, that you are equating yourself with your property. Is it like that? So Upanishad says, in the Taittiriya Upanishad, it is said that annam brahmeti vyajanat. So the student has come to his father and asked a question, teach me Brahman, about Brahman. Then father said, do some tapas and come back to me. that everything is Brahman, whatever you see, etc., etc. Then he went and did tapas and came back and said that annam brahma, I have seen that food is Brahman. Now see, food is Brahman means an apple is me. Food is Brahman, I am Brahman, so food is Brahman, so apple is my food. So I am an apple. What a great CV I have created. And if you put that CV for any kind of job or in the educational institution, people will say the apple will not get admission here. I am an apple. That is what we do. So Shankara says, is it a mistake or is it stupidity? So he says, all these things happen because of one thing, and that is what is called ignorance. He says, these things happen, why does this thing happen? Because of one thing which is called ignorance. And the, what is the ignorance? Ignorance is that we mix up consciousness with matter. Atman with Anatman. Again, we come back to that idea. So how to get rid of that and what will happen? Now, when we can disentangle this granthi, this tying up of two contradictory things. At one end, I tie darkness, another end, I tie light. How wise is the proposition? And we do that. So then how to get out of this ignorance? No, you disentangle this knot. And then what will happen? You will get liberation. And you will get liberation means what? You will know that you are Brahman. You will get liberation, you will be led from darkness to light, from ignorance to consciousness. You see, there are striking examples in our life itself, in material field also. In psychology, there is a branch of psychology contemplating, so contemplative psychology. They have tried to analyze what happens in our brain when we start thinking about ourselves. From morning till evening, what do? We think about others. That person is not good, that person is limping. And in Germany, they say, we have windows. See, we do not block our vision. And walls can save us, but walls, truth about the walls is that the walls can have doors and windows. So in Germany, they create windows, and they themselves say, the Swamiji, we create window not for light, but we open the window to see how what my, our neighbors are doing. What our neighbors are doing. For that only we have windows. Not for light, not for this breeze. So, this when we are thinking about ourselves, withdrawing our mind from all these outside things, nonsense, all this nonsense, then what happens in our brain? Does it light up? What type of light is there in our brain? And there is a great study in this psychology that they have found that is very, very great actually, and that corroborates the discoveries made by Vedanta and also yoga. It says that there are three things about it. One is called neuroplasticity, neural plasticity or adaptability. That when the body works, then the mind creates an impression on it. Or the mind has the capability to create new channels, new network between the neurons. So if you learn new language, more pathways are created and more network is created. So you slowly retard dementia. Learning 12th chapter of the Gita also helps you. Brahma Rupanandaji did that. He compelled people to learn 12th chapter of the, up to 12th chapter or 12th chapter? Maybe anything. 12th chapter of the Gita by heart. You'll see that how much of pathways have been created between the neurons. That is the truth. Swami Vivekananda said that first time. He is the first person who talked about these things. And the second thing is that the epigenetics. All these pathways that we create, our samskaras, are not inherited from our parents. That is the truth. That is what Vedanta said. Not inherited. The example is like this. Because my father was an alcoholic, so I am an alcoholic. This cannot be like that. Einstein's children are never Einsteins. You cannot prove that this is genetically transferred. So then that is called epigenetics, beyond the genetic rules. And third thing is that there is always a bidirectional highway. There are bidirectional highways between the neurons and the body. So when we practice something, like in all fields, like in the sports, when you are learning how to execute a stroke in any field, then you learn again and again. In yoga, you learn the same thing again and again, and afterwards it becomes a reflex. And that creates a big pathway inside the mind. And they have tested that when the body, when we are not in meditation, if you prick a pin on my body anywhere, at the back of our brain, some portion, some places, we will see that it lights up. That is how they have seen in MRI. But those people who are in meditation, Dalai Lama offered some of his monks to be tested like that. And that time, when in meditation the pin is pricked, there is no lighting up in the brain. There is no lighting, completely dissociated the body from the mind and from the self. Where does that impulse go? We don't know. Sri Ramakrishna was sitting in complete samadhi. Someone brought some fire. You know, in India they give dhuna or this incense sticks. So from that flake of that flame fell onto his shoulder, and it burnt that flesh deep. Sri Ramakrishna didn't know. That is the truth about our self and mind and body. We can completely dissociate ourselves from this body, and that is what is called flow in modern language. When we are in flow, we forget about our time, forget about our body. We are what we are. We are in our real self. So that will be called a liberation from our bondage. So if we are able to disentangle these two things, then that will be called liberation, and that also is called a God realization from dualistic standpoint. And that will free us from all miseries. And Shankara says that ignorance creates selfishness and knowledge creates unselfishness. Because as we were discussing yesterday, that we know that we live in all bodies, in all people. Yeah, this is now, time is almost gone. Okay, so then there are two ways to get realization. And this is the truth about all yogas. In karma yoga also, we want to get rid of something and get something. In bhakti yoga also, we want to get rid of something, we want to get something. All yogas are like that. So all yogas, in some way or other, they practice two things. One is called discernment, another is called dispassion. These two things in the non-dual Vedanta, they say nitya nitya vastu viveka, discernment. Ihamutra phala bhoga viraga, dispassion towards all things which are not the self. So this way, everything, all the yogas, they use these two ways. Even in the lives of great people also we have seen that they practiced discernment and dispassion. And then the third thing they did, that they practiced meditation. Because there is something positive to hold on to. If I am getting away from something, where am I going? So I am moving towards something else. And that is what, whether you call it God or call it yourself, that does not make much difference. As yesterday we were discussing, that even those who are following the path of pure dualism, they will reach a point when they meet God, Sri Ramakrishna says. When you meet God, then God, by God's grace you can have this non-dual experience. That the, Sri Ramakrishna says that one day the master will call the servant and say, sit near me, are you and I different? So that oneness will be realized. And that is, I and my Father in heaven are one. That type of oneness we can realize through bhakti yoga also. And these things cannot be achieved in one birth. That's what we have seen, and Vedanta also says. If you accept rebirth, then only all these things will have meaning, otherwise not. So if you don't accept, Shankara will tell, do not read what I have written in the books. If you don't accept rebirth, don't. It is not meant for you. You want to do study Sanskrit, but so don't go to the physics class. Go to Sanskrit class. So it is almost like that. Swami Vivekananda says that we are reading wrong books. We are trying to find God in our chemistry laboratory. That is not possible. Because chemistry laboratory uses different kind of data. And here we use different kind of data. These are Sanskrit data. You should not find this with this Greek alphabet. So it is like that. And then all the four yogas also follow these things. And finally, what we promised to discuss, that is called Seva Yoga. Seva Yoga, why is it called Seva Yoga and what it is? Actually, it is a mixture of Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. That's what we discussed yesterday. That Yoga, Yoga Shastri, Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastri. Sri Krishna said that Eshate Bhita Sankhya Buddhi Yogetu Imam Shtinu. That same intellect has to be used in yoga. Yoga means mixture of karma and bhakti. So, and Shankara has his own way to say that bhakti also belongs to non-dual philosophy. He says, Swaswarupa Anasandhanam Bhakti Riti Avidhiyate. If you are searching for yourself, that is what is called bhakti. Bhakti means one-pointed and well-directed intellect. That is called bhakti. So, now, in traditional karma yoga, we use the word Ishvara Pranidhana. Means surrendering the result of our actions to God. Ishvara Pranidhana, as we discussed yesterday, in the beginning itself we do that. Everything belongs to God. So if we say that this family is God's family, then what will happen? In the beginning itself we will know that we are all children of God. In the olden days we used to write letters like that, yours in the Lord. I am related to you, but not directly. In the Lord, through the Lord. We belong to Lord, we are the same family, so therefore we are related as children of the Lord. So it is like that. Shankara says that when you are searching for your own self, that is also is called bhakti. And in traditional bhakti yoga, there are two ways, two schemes mentioned. That one is that to be dedicated and attached to God. That is one thing. And second thing, to be detached to what will not take us to God. That is the idea. So this is the traditional bhakti yoga. Now in the Gita, Sri Krishna says, Sri Krishna is the first proponent of this Nishkama Karma. Even though we get some traces in the Upanishads of Nishkama Karma, that you see that when Satyakama went to learn the Vedas, then the teacher sent him to tend the cattle and told that when they become 1,000, then you come back. Is that teaching the Vedas or Upanishads? No, through work, dedicated service, when Satyakama came back, he realized. The teacher looked at him and said, you look like a realized person. Who taught you? A teacher is not needed. Even if you are doing this menial work also, tending the cattle, taking care of the cows, you can also realize this non-dual. So Sri Krishna says that he has got different type of devotees. Artho jignyasur artharthi jnanicha. So now see, it is his creation, Lord's creation. Will he exclude anyone? Because I want some money, so I am excluded from his scheme. I am not created by him. a father or mother or a parent have four children. Someone is a doctor, someone is not doing anything. So will the parent say, this is not my son? So someone wants money, someone wants to get rid of some suffering. What is the problem? And Jignasu, someone wants to know God, wants to come to me. And Artharthi, Jnani means someone wants to know the very nature of God, how the God is made, who is the father of God, who is the mother of God, like that. Wants to know deep inside the mystery of God. So analyzes God's position and wants to know God as himself or herself. So Artho Jignasur Artharthi. So if the person is wanting money and goes to God, what is the problem? There is a nice story, I will try to share it with you. And there is a person who was very devoted to God, and he did not want to bother God with material things. So every day he used to go to the shrine in the morning before going to office, and would pray to God and then bow down before God and go back. So that day he went and he sat down and saw that there is something, the eyes of the image looked somewhat different. He went closer to see what happened, and he saw the tears coming out of the two eyes of the Lord. Then he did not know what happened, because he never expected that this stone image will be weeping and tears will come out. He thought something happened and water coming out. So he looked at the chest of the Lord, and that whole decoration got wet. So he just bent down to take a piece of cloth to wipe those water, not tears, water. Then he suddenly felt a touch on his shoulder. He looked back and saw that the image became alive and started speaking to him. And the image said, your mother is hospitalized. You need a lot of money. You are running from pillar to post to gather that money. It is such a big issue. And you did not come to me. You did not ask for my help. So you don't love me, he said. He was dazed completely, and then he heard sobbing. And before the sobbing could melt away in silence, he found himself kneeling down before the Lord and sobbing. So see, if we love God as the be all and end all of our life, then we won't hesitate to tell all our problems to him. Do we really do that? It is necessary. We should think over that. If we love someone, we'll disclose all our problems to that person. So he said, you don't love me. So there are many other words exchanged between this wonderful devotee and the Lord. I don't have time. But see, the Artharthi also is a devotee of God, because he loves God. He loves God. So here, this God has come to our life through work. Every one of us has to work. That's what Sri Krishna says, nahi kaschit kshanam api jatu tishtatya karma krit. Even for a moment, you cannot stay without work. Even mentally, if you are thinking something, that is mental work. Work you have to do. Then how will you do this work? So as I said, that unselfishness is God, as Swamiji said, and unselfish work means when we become unselfish, we don't think I and mine, we think you and yours. That is called unselfishness. And when that comes, then we know that we have found God in our life. Not self, God we have found in our life. Now this Sri Ramakrishna objected to that sentence, which was read out, or someone told, that Name Ruchi Jive Doya Vaishnav Sevan. Name Ruchi, one should have great taste in taking the name of the Lord. Jive Doya, one should show compassion to created beings. And the third sentence is really objectionable here, that Vaishnava Sevan, those who are Vaishnava devotees of God, serve them. Sri Ramakrishna objected. Jive Daya and Vaishnava Sevan. Now, what kind of discrimination? Everyone here in this creation is created by God. So we are all children of God. Why there is such discrimination? So he said, seva will come first. Jive seva, not daya. So he added that last word and obliterated this Vaishnava and daya. So seva came and jiva seva, he said. Now, Swamiji said that seeing the Lord inside that jiva, serve it. Then what happens, you know, it is a little bit departure from the traditional bhakti yoga. In bhakti yoga, we worship God and we offer the outcome of our works or results to God. Means we have to carry it to the shrine and put it there before God. It is something like that. At the end, we offer it. But here, Sri Ramakrishna says, in the beginning itself, it is God with whom you are transacting. So whatever you are doing, it is his seva directly. So there is no question of having a result for that. The result belongs to him already, because the whole work belongs to him. So that is what is called seva, and that is real seva. Love thy neighbor as thyself. As thyself. Otherwise, it is no love. It is a kind of bargaining. So here, in the seva yoga, we don't need to think of a separate God sitting somewhere on the clouds, and you have to hire an aeroplane or jet to carry your result to him and offer it to him. No, it is here in front of you. Whatever you are doing, it is for him. And the great benefit of this seva is that when you are doing puja in the shrine, there is a problem. Not real problem, somewhat a problem. Because you don't know whether the Lord likes your puja or not. You don't know whether he likes the taste of your food. When you cook and serve it to others and you just expect some kind of praise, wonderful taste, then it is a big problem. You cannot say that it is taste bad, because that will hurt that person. Then you somehow manipulate things, become more diplomatic and say, it's wonderful, what is the name of this item? Though it is called sambar, served to you, but there is no sourness in this. So you have to appreciate it. You appreciate it. It's nice taste, but different taste actually. Sometimes in Germany they say it is interesting, interessant, interesting. But I don't say that. I say, what is the name of this item? Give it a name. So we expect some appreciation, and that you don't get here. In the puja, you do it, but you don't know if Thakur is happy or not. But if you do a mistake to these people whom you are serving as God, then they will be angry. They will say, it is not tasting good, too much salt in this, etc. So you know, you can correct yourself very quickly. The living God can talk to you, and you can correct your mistakes. That is the great advantage in the seva yoga. You know whether you are doing it right or wrong. So therefore, Sri Ramakrishna's idea of this seva is wonderful. It is no way different from this traditional bhakti yoga. But this small difference is that the God immediately you see in front of you. And as Holy Mother has said, even if you don't get the taste, but try to do japa mechanically. As I have said, this bi-directional highway between the hands and the head, that will create impression, a good impression on your mind. And that will change the brain chemistry. You become a better person. That is the idea of seva yoga. Thank you very much. I have 5 minutes time for questions. Well, there is a question. It is lying here from yesterday. So what is the meaning of this Gita sloka, sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam raja? That I have said, leave everything, even for, if you need money, you just pray to God and tell him that you need money. He may not give you, but Atma Gyanananda ji is there, he will announce. So if we really test our love for God, this is one great test. Try to practice that. For everything, you just tell everything to God. Bireswaranandji Maharaj used to tell us that at the end of the day, when you do your prayer before going to bed, give an account of the whole day to the Lord. Whatever you have done, whether you have done a mistake, whether you have been tortured, or you got some misjudgment against you, or something, you tell everything to him and be free. Do that, you will see, you will sleep very well. In spite of very difficult, strenuous problem, you can sleep very well. I guarantee that is the truth. You can really sleep well. Just talk with him and give, tell everything, even your defects. There you cannot hide anything, really. You cannot hide anything. What should we do about our less fortunate fellow beings who have physical needs, mental needs, what we are realizing? Yes, the more you try to realize Brahman, the more you feel for others. Then we don't need to tell you what you will do. You will know what you should do. Now 4 minutes, 3 seconds remain. So there is a question: when you are thinking of the self, are you becoming selfish? In English language, it is okay. If you are thinking about the self, it is selfishness. But in reality, it's not like that. If we are thinking of the self, we don't become selfish. We become selfless. That is the truth about the self. That is the nature of the self. Sri Ramakrishna asked Swami Vivekananda, suppose there is a bowl of nectar and you have become a fly. How will you drink of it? So then Swami Vivekananda wanted to be clever. So he said, I will sit on the edge of that and with stretched neck drink off that nectar. Then Sri Ramakrishna asked, why don't you plunge into it and drink? Then Swamiji said, Swami Vivekananda said, then I will die. Sri Ramakrishna laughed. He said, I told it is a bowl of nectar. When you plunge into it, you will become immortal. You won't die. That is the nature of nectar. So when we try to realize ourselves, we become more selfless because we will see, the more we know ourselves, the more we will know others also. We will see the same self in others. This is an extension of me. Love thyself as love thy neighbor as thyself. First practice is try to practice self-realization. Then you will know why you should love others. So then it will be easy for us to know what to do. You mentioned defects could be seen as an advantage. Is it the same thing when Holy Mother says, see no fault with others? Yes, that's what Holy Mother also said, but the meaning is different. Holy Mother did not say to a mother, do not find fault with your children. Did not say that. It should not be a bad habit. For the sake of finding fault, you try to find fault. It should not be a bad habit. But a mother can do, should find fault with the children, otherwise how the children will be corrected and how they will they grow. But mother do not find fault out of hatred. She finds fault with out of tremendous love for the children. Do we really do that? So finding fault could be a blessing if you love at the same time you can tell the truth. Will doing japa take care of all the bad samskaras, all. Yes, that's what Holy Mother has said. Japa has only meaning that it purifies your mind. It helps you to purify your mind. And when mind is purified, Shuddha Mon, Shuddha Buddhi, Shuddha Atma, one and the same. So purified mind, purified intellect, purified Atman, they are one and the same. So Holy Mother says that all your samskaras will be eliminated by doing japa. That's what japa does. One can get samadhi also with the help of japa. That's what Mother has said. When we try to focus our mind, it starts to wander around. How to focus our mind to a single point? This is also my case. When I start to focus my mind, it starts wandering about. But the problem is that we have to. We are not trying. We have to try hard. It is not that easy. So, and it happened to Sri Ramakrishna also. Sri Ramakrishna said, when I was meditating, I saw my mind has gone to Rasik's house. So Saradanandaji has written that truth about Sri Ramakrishna's mind. Then we found a very blank check. If the mind of Sri Ramakrishna can travel to the sixth house while meditating, our mind can go to supermarket. But the problem is, Sri Ramakrishna was the savior. So his mind wandered to Rasik's house to save him. But to save whom does our mind go to supermarket? Practice is the only way, practice. That is what this epigenetics, this neural plasticity says. The more we practice, it creates more deeper and deeper samskaras. So we have to practice more and more. If everything depends on God's wish, how japas will help in process of attaining God? Everything happens at God's will, then you should not have any other will. And if you have your own will to cook better food, to go to cinema, etc., etc., then you can accept that some will belongs to you. So therefore you need to do japa. At the end of the day, everything will become God's will, but not in the beginning. That is our problem. We think that in the beginning it will be everything God's will. No. We should enjoy our will also, and at one day we'll see that our wings start becoming tired and tired. And when it cannot fly anymore, then we'll sit on the mast and say, wherever the mast takes me, I will go. Sri Ramakrishna says, if you want to get privileges of a mad person, try to be real mad. Otherwise, it is cheating the government. How will one understand God's wishes and how we can proceed on? Anything. That is one good thing about God's wish. When you are practicing devotion to God, dedication to God, and also surrender yourself to God, then you will see, you will really see anything, whatever, a pen falls from your hand, you will see that is the will of the Lord. It happens. You will see that everything is Lord's will. That everyone, this is a feeling of everyone. You cannot intellectually understand this. Is there anything wrong with the process of searching for the perpetual soul of the universe, ultimate goal, and at the same time trying to make my memory, okay, some maybe increasingly meaningful, actually. There is no contradiction in that. You can go on practicing, your memory will be augmented, and that will help you to realize the truth behind this universe. Please clarify, Brahmarpanam and I am apple. So, Brahmarpanam, actually, what is the difference between the subject and object? These are all deeper understanding, one has to analyze it. I cannot just explain it in a few seconds. But thing is that what is the difference between the subject and the object? Where is the line of demarcation between these two? There is an apple and I am here. Now I am the eater and the apple is the object of my food. But when you eat up that apple, what happens between subject and object? What is the line of demarcation? So at one point of time, we will forget that there is an object to be studied. Most of the time, the problem happens, we want to study the universe being dissociated from it. It is not possible. Someone asked in Hollywood, what is your opinion about population growth? I said, my opinion, my problem is that I am part of it. So I am part of the problem itself. So what would be my opinion? I am myself a problem. So this is like that. So until and unless we realize, we will always find a difference between the apple and the eater. So if we go on practicing, then at the end of the day, we'll see that everything is Brahman, not before that. Thank you very much. The questions are over. And so I believe that you have understood everything. At the last session, I will have the privilege to ask questions to you based on the talks given up till now. Thank you very much. Wish you all the best.
And you got a free phone also.
Free phone? Okay. Wish you all the best for the last session. Really?
Yes, sir. No, there's a question on it.
Oh, my. How to... Now it is too late. I don't know. But I saw there are so many questions, and they are actually, maybe you have taken a picture of the Yoga Sutra page, and then I have to explain that. Brahma Rupanandaji Maharaj is there, Atma Gyananandaji is there, and if I want to look at that, it would be their failure, proving their failure, so I should not open it. Thank you very much.